Okay, we're back for episode, is it 110?
God almighty, Tim, it's 110. Time flies.
110, there we go. 100 plus 10 of Powers and Principalities. And tonight, I think we agreed to talk about the case of one Jeffrey Edward Epstein, or Epstein. How you want to pronounce it. It's like Frankenstein and Frankenstein. I don't know. Anyway, Jeffrey Epstein, born January 20th, 1953, is an American financier and reported sex offender. I'm sorry, registered sex offender. He began his career in finance at the investment bank of Bear Stearns before forming his own firm, Epstein or J. Epstein and Company. Epstein was convicted in 2008 of soliciting a 14-year-old girl for prostitution, for which he served 13 months in custody with work release. Of course, that makes you seem like he was out there, you know, picking trash off highways or something, but really he would check in. He would spend the night at his own private cell at the county jail, and then during the day, 16 hours a day, could go to his mansion down there or wherever else he wanted to go. This was part of a plea deal where federal officials had identified 36 victims. The plea deal was made by Alexander Acosta, who was then the United States Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, who agreed to grant immunity from all federal criminal charges to Epstein. Epstein was arrested again on July 6, 2019, on federal charges for sex trafficking of minors in Florida and New York. Epstein was born, again, yeah, he was born in Brooklyn, New York, to Jewish parents. I believe both were working class, upper middle, not, or lower middle class, rather. I think his mother worked at a school, and his father was a gardener and groundskeeper and maintenance guy for the Parks and Recreations Department. Jeffrey is the oldest of two siblings. He attended the National Music Camp at Interlochen Center for the Arts. He graduated in 1969 from Lafayette High School at the age of 16, skipping two grades. Later that year, he attended classes at Cooper Union till he changed colleges in 1971. In the fall of 1971, he attended Courant Institute for Mathematical Sciences at New York University, but left without receiving a degree in 1974. In August 1981, Epstein founded his own consulting firm, International Assets Group Incorporated, which assisted clients in recovering stolen money from fraudulent brokers and lawyers. 6 years later, in 1987, Stephen Hoffenberg hired Epstein as a consultant for Tower Financial Corporation, a collection agency that bought debts people owed to hospitals, banks, and phone companies. Epstein left Tower Financial Corporation just before it imploded in 1993 as one of the biggest Ponzi schemes in American history, lost investors $450 million. The same year that Epstein began consulting with Hoffenberg in 1987, he founded his own financial management firm, J. Epstein & Company. The company was formed to manage the assets of clients with more than $1 billion net worth. The main publicly known billionaire client of Epstein was Leslie Wexner, chairman and CEO of L Brands Corporations, formerly Limited Brands. Soon after meeting Wexner in 1986, Epstein became his financial advisor and served as his charge d'affaires in his business dealings. By 1995, Epstein was director of the Wexner Foundation and Wexner Heritage Foundation. He was also the president of Wexner's Properties, which developed the town of New Albany outside Columbus, Ohio, where Wexner lived. Although never employed by L Brands, he corresponded frequently with the company's executives. He also often attended Victoria's Secret fashion shows. It's not a surprise. And hosted as New York City home the fashion models and helped aspiring models get work with the company. It's very nice of him. In 1996, Epstein changed the name of his firm to a financial trust company and for tax advantages based it in the island of St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands. In March 2005, a woman contacted Florida's Palm Beach Police Department and alleged that her 14-year-old stepdaughter had been taken to Epstein's mansion by an older girl. There she was allegedly paid $300 to strip and massage Epstein. She allegedly undressed but left the encounter wearing her underwear. Okay. Police began an 11-month undercover investigation of Epstein, followed by a search of his home. The Federal Bureau of Investigation also became involved in the investigation. Subsequently, the police alleged that Epstein had paid several escorts to perform sexual acts on him. Interviews with five alleged victims and 17 witnesses under oath, a high school transcript, and other items found in Epstein's trash and home allegedly showed that some of the girls involved were under 18. The police searched Epstein's homes, found two hidden cameras and large numbers of photos of girls throughout the house, some of whom the police had interviewed in the course of their investigation. The International Business Times reported that papers filed in 2006 lawsuit alleged that Epstein installed concealed cameras in numerous places of his property to record sexual activity with underage girls by prominent people for criminal purposes such as blackmail. Epstein also allegedly lent girls to powerful people to ingratiate himself with them, also to gain possible blackmail information. In 2015, evidence came to light that one of the powerful men at Epstein's mansion may have been Prince Andrew, the Duke of York. In May 2006, Palm Beach police filed a probable cause affidavit saying that Epstein should be charged with four counts of unlawful sex with minors and one molestation count. Epstein's team of defense lawyers included Roy Black, who defended William Kennedy Smith, various celebrities, and financial crime specialist Gerald Lefcourt, Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, and in 2007, the special prosecutor of Bill Clinton, Ken Starr. After the federal government agreed to charging Epstein on one count under state law, the prosecution convened a Palm Beach County grand jury. Palm Beach Police Chief Michael Reitner then accused the state attorney of being too lenient and was instrumental in transferring the case to the FBI. The grand jury returned a single charge of felony solicitation of prostitution, to which Epstein pleaded not guilty in August 2006. It was after this that I think he negotiated the non-prosecution agreement. The investigation resulted in a 53-page federal indictment. Alexander Acosta, then United States Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, agreed to plea deal to grant immunity from all federal charges to Epstein, along with four named co-conspirators and unnamed potential co-conspirators. According to the Miami Herald, the non-prosecution agreement essentially shut down an ongoing FBI probe into whether there were more victims and other powerful people who took part in Epstein's sex crimes. At the time, this halted the investigation and sealed the indictment. The Miami Herald states Acosta agreed, despite a federal law to the contrary, that he would deal that the deal would be kept from the victims. Acosta later said that he had been told that Epstein belonged to intelligence and was above his pay grade and to leave it alone. Epstein agreed to plead guilty to the state prostitution charges, register as a sex offender, and pay restitution to three dozen victims identified by the FBI. The Guardian, a British newspaper, reported despite this, the U.S. government eventually agreed to allow Epstein to plead guilty to just one count of soliciting prostitution from an underage girl under Florida state law. Epstein agreed not to contest the civil claims brought by 40 women identified by the FBI, but escaped a prosecution that could have seen him jailed for the rest of his life. The deal was declared illegal in February 2008 due to its victims not being notified. So that was the case against Abby Epstein. His meteoric rise is interesting because I think within a few years he became a partner of Bear Stearns, and he left under an insider trading scandal, and that's when he apparently went under the wing of this guy Leslie Wexner. And I guess he was off to the races. I think Leslie Wexner was the one that gave him his $56 million, 21,000 square foot mansion in New York, his so-called townhouse. So that's the case against Jeffrey Epstein. As it stands now, he's now facing federal charges. Perhaps he's been burned by intelligence that he supposedly belongs to, and maybe some deal will be struck. But I don't think we'll really get to the bottom of this because apparently, it's above all of our pay grades, isn't it?
Yeah, way above mine. I don't really understand the Epstein case because I don't think anyone can, looking into the secret society like we do, because you never really know what they're doing with these things. You look at like Pizzagate and the accusations about child molestation and child porn. And then it just kind of fizzles out. Nothing ever comes of it. And the question that some people ask is, well, is this just sort of a psychological operation to try to normalize child pornography and child sex slavery, right? It's just a way to show that there's nothing you can do about it. And so when you look at Epstein, it's, you know, again, you wonder, well, a couple things that you didn't mention that I think are important is that he is a member, or was up till recently, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. He's a member of the Trilateral Commission. So that is, you know, it's a mystery as to how individuals like that interact with the penal system. I mean, I'll get into that in a second. But then beyond that, you have his, you pointed out, his meteoric rise financially. I mean, if you look into this a little bit, it just makes no sense at all. How does this guy end up as a billionaire? I mean, I read all of his hedge fund lose money or go out of business. Bear Stearns collapses. The billionaire takes him under his wing and then gives him, you know, like a $60 million house, you know, just for being good looking or something, you know. And so it looks to me that there is a very strong possibility that he's just an artificial character. In other words, that what you've got here is someone who, you know, his background was basically circumvented, right? In other words, that he didn't actually do a lot of these things. They just sort of give him this background because they wanted him to be what he was. And it looks to me, you know, just looking at the data that you mentioned, that, well, it has something to do with children's sex slavery, right? I mean, there's just so much of the smoke all around him. And he's involved with Robert Maxwell's daughter. Maxwell was, you know, has been called the premier spy of the 20th century by some people, right? And yet his daughter ends up somehow having this relationship with Epstein. If you look at the photographic record, they're together everywhere. They seem to be very friendly. And one of the, you know, because again, because we can't see into the machinations of the secret society except through, you know, analysis, the thought comes up that really perhaps Epstein wasn't having Maxwell's daughter procure him children. Maybe Epstein was the procurer. Maybe that's what his role was, perhaps, and that's why he had this you know, high stature as supposedly a financially you know, wise individual who made a lot of money, but actually that was just a cutout. And then perhaps he was just created artificially so that it wouldn't be surprising that he would then have all this money and be able to, one way or another, acquire all these children, because that's really what they are. You know, a lot of times they are euphemistic and they'll say young women. You know, 14-year-old girl is not a young woman; it's a child, and that is an individual that cannot give informed consent. So you have to think of him in this regard. And so you can see, therefore, that there is just something wrong with the whole political class. You know, we've had so many discussions about this, that the political class is in and of itself evil. And it is a secret society or part of a secret society. We think that there are these democratic choices, but there are actually strings controlling these people. And I think Epstein is a really good sort of example of this, because look at his friends list, right? Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, Ken Starr is his attorney, for heaven's sakes. I mean, he's all over the political map. And even the prince, you know, of Duke of Kent, Prince Andrew, shows up, you know, in his life. So there is something wrong with the political class, and Epstein is a really good portal into understanding it, because these people, like Clinton, for example, the relationship that Clinton has had with him, both Clintons, over the last like 10 years, since the child rape conviction, which is, that wasn't the charge he was convicted of, but that's really what it was, that relationship shouldn't exist. I mean, a political personage should have, you know, respect for the damage to a child that an individual has caused, and because you're representing the public with your political position, you shouldn't have anything to do with someone like that, right? That you shouldn't be friends with someone like that. You shouldn't be glad handing with someone like that. There shouldn't be, all of these plane logs showing that the Clintons are riding around with this guy.
27 times for Bill?
Yeah. I mean, that is not a relationship that a political person should have. That if someone has that relationship, then they should be shunned and they should be excluded from participating in our political world. They shouldn't, let alone being, running for president or becoming president. So this is the thing about Epstein, is that there's no way to know who or what he is. I just don't believe that that's possible. I mean, he's certainly involved in child rape. I mean, he was, the evidence, was basically overwhelming. But as to what he does with, or what his real role is in all this, it's just, it'll be really difficult to see. And this gets back to my original point, is that you have the secret society, and then you have public democracy. You've got stuff like sheriffs and prosecutors, and I can't imagine that all of them are controlled. I just think this is too vast a number. I doubt this very much. So what you have is, from time to time, the two sides interact, mm-hmm. right? You get someone like Epstein, who he's actually captured. There's evidence.
Yeah.
So now what does the secret society do? They're going to have to manage this in a way that doesn't basically expose them, or certainly not damage them in any way. So then you get things like Acosta's statement. You mentioned it, that where he says, well, I was told that he belongs to intelligence and that he's above my pay grade. Well, I mean, Tim, what kind of a, first of all, I mean, like,
this is a matter of national security. You can't ask any questions.
Right? If he is, if he does not belong to security, then Acosta should be fired.
Yeah.
As a U.S. attorney for Miami, because he's just being bullied around by hearsay, and he's not representing the victims. However, the fact that Acosta would then make the statement years later, right,
mm-hmm.
strongly suggests that it was true.
I believe it was during his confirmation hearings as labor secretary.
Yeah.
That he made that remark.
Yeah. And so what this means is that someone made a real declaration that Epstein belongs to intelligence, that he does, that this is true. And that looking at Acosta, who's obviously a mediocre attorney, then he becomes a meteoric political figure, right? Suddenly now you see him with Trump and whatnot. This suggests that a very crude payoff occurs, right? This is, again, to the idea of, like, how does the secret society interact with those individuals that think the world is real and have positions, in police and in the judicial system? So they have to have some means of intimidation, of media blackout, of control over the whole thing.
But why wouldn't the media kind of tee off? If the media were like curious, gregarious, intrepid reporters, investigative journalists, well, can you explain that statement? And if it does indeed belong to intelligence, are you suggesting that our intelligence agencies, who are supposedly there to protect the national security, are routinely involved in sex trafficking? I mean, you and I know the answer to that, but I'm saying in the normie world, wouldn't that, wait a second, that doesn't stop the questions. It just raises a whole other series of questions. And perhaps, where is the Senate Intelligence Committee? Where's the oversight? There should be like this should be the scandal instead of, the sexual, perverted sexual desires of some sort of strange billionaire,
Well said, brother. And I mean, I just couldn't agree more. That's absolutely correct. This should be the story. I mean, just that little statement by Acosta, I was told he belongs to intelligence and he's above my pay grade to back off. Okay, that means that every single politician in our country that is real, that isn't owned by the mm-hmm. secret society, part of them, should just say, this is the premier responsibility of democracy. from now until we get to the bottom of this.
Well, above my pay grade, wait a second. You are a law enforcement officer of the federal government. You're saying there are agencies sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and to protect the public by enforcing the law. You're saying that there are entities and agencies that are beyond the law? I know the answer to this, but I'm saying this was being admitted here, right?
Yeah. I mean basically, it's like Acosta's response should have been, yeah, and I've been watching Powers and Principalities, and you know what? I totally agree with those guys, and that's why I didn't do anything.
But instead of that, you have the Twitter war between Trump and these three Congress gals.
Yeah. Right, about the distraction. But anyway, yeah. Here in our show, we'll try to be, you know, as best we can to be clear-minded. And so I just can't agree with you more. That statement is the real crime. I mean, because in it is incorporated all the crimes against the children.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is how they are protected. This is how the individual who raped these kids are being protected. In that statement, somehow, if you burrow into it, if you find out who was actually making this pressure against Acosta, and you trace it back and you start working back, you'll find the real truth. I mean, this you know, I think it's really kind of a watershed, and I'm curious as to how this is going to all play out, because it would seem that to me is that the people who believe that there is an actual functioning democracy, who are in the penal system in one form or another, district attorneys, police, investigator, perhaps even investigative reporters, they got him. They have Epstein exposed now. And so they're going to move forward with this, and then they're going to start interacting with the secret society, with the top-down pressure. And so you'll see, I would presume, that they will find ways to quash the information process, so that some way of numbing the public, or diluting the charges, or of getting it out of the hands of someone who is going forward with investigations, That's all going to happen. I mean, this kind of reminds me, actually, I mean, just to give an analogy, is like when the CNN reporter on 911 came to the Pentagon, and he was able to walk up to the building and there was no plane crash, right? And then that footage then disappears, right? Never played again. And yet, if the real reporting and real reporters, the people who are not part of the secret society perpetrating the act, had been in control, it would have been the only thing. There would have been nothing else on the air until that was resolved, right? Because this is just basically saying it's an inside job. I mean, it's just really what it is. There's no plane, and then the Pentagon is blown up. There's a huge hole in it. So we have to get to the bottom of what caused the explosion, who was in back of it. Obviously, the story of the hijacked plane is false, so therefore we've got to start this process. Well, here is another example. And this is, it's an example now the alt media needs to take up. And, I mean, this is why we're doing the show, really, is so that we can, to try to create some interest and energy on the part of people listening to the show, who then will hopefully go out and start the process of just information exchange with everyone, that look, Acosta gave us basically the roadmap. I mean, the statement is clear as a bell, Tim. It's clear as a bell. Someone's putting pressure on him who has that kind of power. Who is it? And how can we start identifying? If, you know, the first thing that should be done is that Acosta should identify who made the statement.
Yeah, well, I mean, either Acosta's compromise or Superior's compromise, which explains an operation. This is the practical use of a blackmail operation like Epstein's, is that you the government, key people are either compromised or bribed. It's interesting. I read that the current Attorney General Barr, The Dalton School's headmaster was his father, who hired Epstein back in the 1970s.
Small world.
So that's interesting, if that is indeed true. He, at one time, he was the headmaster. The question, was he the headmaster when Epstein was hired? And I think he was. Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, the publishing heiress, Robert Maxwell, his sister, how did he become a big shot? Well, through intelligence. Yeah, I think he was a Jewish operative in Czechoslovakia around World War II. He left Czechoslovakia and came to England, and he was an Israeli. Jewish, then an Israeli agent who was a double agent, kind of playing both sides during the Cold War for the benefit of Israel. And some people have described him as one of the founding fathers of the Israeli state. His role, he played a key role in facilitating or securing the shipment, illegal shipment of arms. And this is primarily done in the United States through the sort of this network of Jewish criminals like Myra Lansky, publishers like Hank Greenspun, and this sort of this Jewish network, the Jewish Agency it was called before it became Israel. Mixture of judges, politicians, and organized crime figures, and business people, you know, businessmen, the Jewish were supporting Israel, the formation of the Israeli state. But he was according to reports, Robert Maxwell was up, lived a high life, was a womanizer, much like Epstein, and he named the yacht that he supposedly jumped off, committed suicide, was named after Ghislaine. It's called the Ghislaine, I believe. And it's been reported that he apparently met his demise threatening the Mossad because he'd gotten into some financial problems with his empire and wanted a $400 million bailout and threatened to expose something. So the Mossad took care of him, allegedly. And he was found floating off the Canary Islands. That's the story, at least. I don't know, maybe he faked death and he went off somewhere. I don't know. Again, this is a Hall of Mirrors. You don't know. It's a Funhouse Hall of Mirrors, Horror House Hall of Mirrors. You don't know these things. But Ghislaine herself is an interesting figure because she's the one that sort of identified, approached Jeffrey Epstein back in the late 80s or 90s when he was a younger man and sort of groomed him for this position. This is during his meteoric rise. And he's taken under the wing by this guy Wexner, who is a key figure in sort of this Jewish financial empire that's heavily involved in intelligence and espionage, just as, Onan Milkin out in California, out in Hollywood, a similar figure. He becomes sort of this oligarch billionaire who makes more money really in intelligence than in the movie making business and brags about it. And because of Jewish privilege, he's never convicted for these things. No one wants to touch him. Reason why no one wants to touch him could be Jewish influence, or could be that everyone's blackmailed. This is, the practical use of an operation like Epstein's. And I'm sure it's not the only one out there, right? I mean, come on. Wexner himself, the person that gave him Epstein in his house and made him a billionaire, almost like made him a billionaire, because no one can really, he doesn't seem to be able to justify how he earned his money, because, again, everywhere he went, the companies were either, went bankrupt or something. It was like a Ponzi scheme. Wexner runs a number of charity organizations called the Mega Group, and this is kind of a front for the Zionist Mossad in the United States. And this helped this operation also spearheaded a lot of propaganda campaigns in the 90s and the 2000s regarding the Middle East, sort of in coaxing or driving the United States into the wars in the Middle East. Wexner's Mega Group also consists of 20 fellow Jewish American financial titans who use their Zionist power to manipulate and control politicians in Washington, D.C. It gets us fighting Israel's dirty illegal wars. And again, this is all mixed into this business empire in Hollywood and their influence in the media and these things. So this is how it operates. These so-called they're all involved in this. These businessmen like Epstein, and Ghislaine herself, she apparently, she's almost like a Bond figure where, she apparently she's helio-rated. She can operate a helicopter. She's a pilot. She can operate an aircraft. And she's really capable. And she seems to be sort of been trained in this. And she's, I think, one that's out there getting getting Epstein to do these things so he can collect information that she can use and or use as bargaining power or broker throughout the world to various intelligence agencies, chief of which is probably the Mossad, So, and the history of blackmailing politicians, intelligence agencies doing these things is longstanding. I mean, you can point out several examples throughout history. I was reading It was about this isn't racist, not in geopolitics, but this is an example of domestic politics. In the passage of the 64 Civil Rights Act, Lyndon Johnson often would call recalcitrant members of Congress who were hesitant to vote for it, and he'd remind them, you know, hey, what were you doing in that brothel? You know, and yeah. So, and this is how legislation is passed. And you know, this a lot of this information was gotten by J. Edgar Hoover, but then J. Edgar Hoover at the end was turned around, was blackmailed by Meyer Lansky, who returned the favor of not doing anything about organized crime for several decades. And I was reading something about Estes Kefauver, who was investigating the mob. The Kefauver hearings, the 1950s, you know, we all know about that. And he supposedly was investigating the mob, but apparently he was compromised, which turned blunting that investigation. He had a weakness for these things. So it's longstanding. I mean, it's there's reports that Bill Clinton's thing with Monica Lewinsky was an Israeli operation, you know.
Yeah, I thought that the Monica Lewinsky thing was just like, culture pollution. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember, they're multifaceted, I presume. They, like the alchemical aspect of it. But it was just to enable the female talking heads to be able to discuss oral sex every night on the news for 2 years. Yes. I mean, honestly, it was just completely ludicrous. But I thought, looking back, I thought that's why they, you know, that's why they found the dress. I mean, the idea of, like, saving the dress was insane, and yet people just accepted it like, well, this is part of, you know, it's reality. It's not just some kind of culture polluting, you know, fiction that is being hoisted on the public. But in hindsight, I think it's pretty clear. You brought up a really good point that because Epstein looks so completely artificial, I mean, you try to look through his finances, and, you know, of course, not that easy to do, but nevertheless, it just seems like the guy is complete cutout. Like,
if he's so brilliant, how come there's no, like, I never hear him talk or anything?
No, of course I know. Yeah, exactly. They have, like, this kind of bogus thing about, you know, like Martin Luther King's PhD, and you have, you know, he's like skipping grades and stuff. But I've never actually seen a video of him, but just based on the track record of his, the businesses he created and oversaw, there wasn't anything special about his financial acumen. So it looks more like he's just was created with a story, you know, like, you know, as they do with spooks. Spooks have, you know, persona, and they sell it, and the Lifetime actors sell it to the whole public. They don't just sell it to a little knot of people that they're trying to get information out of. You know, Epstein could just be part of a giant procuring operation that Maxwell is running, and he arranged to have him made into this character. And now he has little St. James Island. And I wanted just to digress just for a few seconds to go into some of the symbolism, because I think, you know, like talking about like Lewinsky and the alchemical, I think there's also like a symbolic level that is often associated with these operative degenerates, you know. And I mean, little Saint James. Well, I mean, James means Jacob, which of course means Israel, right? I mean, this is James is the Greek for Jacob, and Jacob represents God names him Israel. He has all these kids, you know, and stuff. And so that's interesting that the island that he chose has that name. But the most important thing to me about the island is the little weird temple that is built on the top of it. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of the thing, but it had a gold dome, and it was blue and white stripes. And then on the ground around it, it had a lot of right-angled geometric patterns. And what I think the building is representing is like the same thing that the Israeli flag does, the blue and white. Then the building was blue and white. And I think it's basically a representation of a tallit, which is the Jewish prayer shawl, which is basically a symbol of Israel. And people have actually, there's a couple of people picked up on that. They go, gosh, it kind of looks like, you know, particularly with these geometric forms, which look like something you'd see on a tallit. They wonder about it. And, you know, it wouldn't be of any, interest whatsoever, if he wanted to have a kind of a representation of a synagogue based with, designer elements. I mean, who would care? But what's problematic, Tim, is the fact that he has these big statues of owls on the corners of the temple. And that is really troubling because, the owl is a representation of Moloch. Very often, like, for example, at the Bohemian Grove, some people, they go, oh, no, it's not an owl, it's Minerva, or, but they don't, realize, like the Bohemian Grove, it's completely transparent. If you go to the Bohemian Club, in San Francisco, you can see the owl is being represented as the club symbol, right? Right up in front of the public, and it's called the Owl Club. It's one of the things that it's known as. And so the figure that they burn with the horns, the idea that an owl couldn't be symbolizing it is just completely far-fetched. And so when you see the these creatures on his temple, you have to think it might be a kind of way of this representing Moloch. It's wrong. It's sort of like his relationship with Clinton is wrong. Representing Moloch, or things which can be seen as Moloch, or the Moloch owl, is not something, Tim, that a convicted child rapist should be doing.
No.
Shouldn't be doing that, because you see, if you look at Moloch in the Old Testament, you can see it's a law all about child sacrifice.
Yes.
Right?
Which you
okay,
can
so that, yeah, this is not being very respectful to the parents of the kids that Epstein violated. Not very respectful, because you see, even if he had some different symbolic framework for these giant images, nevertheless, he should have the insight to be able to see, well, it could be seen as such, this the Moloch of the Old Testament, because, gee, it's such a common thing in the internet now that people make this claim, and they point to all the passages in the Old Testament where they talk about Moloch is where the kids go to be sacrificed. And so, Kings, 2 Kings 23, I think, where, the sons and daughters will pass through the fire to Moloch, And so the Old Testament, creepy symbolism, lots of violence and weird stuff, hard to really know exactly what the words mean, but it's not pretty under any circumstance. And I would really like, Because one thing, it's vague and violent, and so things can be read into it one way or another.
What is it with these wealthy power brokers that they have these weird taste in art, macabre, perverted? I mean, we have like the Podesta brothers and some of that pedophilic art.
This should be right at the very. If you look at the emails that the whole Pizzagate thing. They actually, if memory serves, I'll try to recite it. But if memory serves, it's something like, I'm going to go in the backyard and sacrifice a chicken to Moloch.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember that guy, he was basically a very close aide of Hillary Clinton. Now, you see, given the pedophile clique that swirled around the Clintons, and a lot of this stuff that they've been like Laura Silsby, there was actually convictions.
Yeah.
Making jokes about Moloch shouldn't really be in the genre, right? I mean, this is not something that this clique should be engaging in. Not they shouldn't be making jokes about it because of the obvious association with child sacrifice, you see. And Epstein should not have those things on his little whatever it is, his temple, his music, because he should have a little more insight, right, into what people think about these images, because it's very, very unfortunately just very telling, in my opinion, as to what his real perspective is in the world. In other words, one way of looking at it is he's basically saying, well, Moloch is just a great thing. We're just going to run all their children right through this underground process, use them as sex slaves, and then kill them.
Yeah, apparently right? The temple has a bar on the outside of the door.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that has been asserted. If you look at the pictures, it looks fairly... Like,
yeah, you can't, keeping something inside, yeah.
And incidentally, I mean, I could be wrong about this.
Yeah.
Because, again, you can only really approach these things analytically. But I'm just saying, Tim, look, I mean, he's got giant owl-like birds on the outside of something that sure looks like a tallet with a full dome.
Yeah, it's almost like if you walk into someone's house, if you just walk into someone's house and you saw that the house is decorated with strange, you know, pedophilic art, twisted, demented, macabre art, that'd be an alarm bell for you, right? Red flag, right? Red flag for the person's character.
Yeah,
but if they're wealthy, it's like, they're just eccentric. The same thing, you know, apparently he has, I heard it, that he, in his mansion in New York, he has these glass eyes or fake eyeballs from World War I. And he has them cemented or glued in to all these eyes that stare at you.
The old all-seeing eye.
Yeah, it's like, it's bizarre.
Yeah, so, but you see, I think that if you actually kind of look at his temple, and there are lots of pictures online. If people listen to this, they can just go and check it out. You know, he's got the gold dome. It's at the very top. He's got these.
It was blown off in a storm, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah, well, the hurricane blew the top off,
yeah.
But you can see the pictures of it before the hurricane came through. And it looks like kind of like... it
might have been a message, you know, God was sending him.
Yeah, well, God would have leveled it if he
yeah.
was going to give the right message. But anyway, so, you know, you have this kind of strange thing, and then there you have these images, and it's just, it's wrong. It's wrong in the same way, and the fact that it isn't being investigated is also wrong. That should be... The relationship, first of all, to this Moloch thing. I mean, here are people making jokes about it, and in order to make a joke about Moloch, it has to be a term that the whole community, the thought world community, understands, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I made a joke about Moloch to someone on the street, they wouldn't even know what it meant. I have no idea, right? But yet, in this group. In this world, they not only know about Moloch, they know about Thelema, right? Because another of the emails, they said, well, we need a Thelema favor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, who knows about Thelema except people who are followers of Aleister Crowley to some degree? Who knows about Moloch unless you're into very, very creepy understanding of, the kind of genocide that Moloch represents in the Old Testament and popped up in the movie Metropolis, I believe it's called, by Fritz Lang, which then, circling back, was conveniently found in a photograph of a collection of gifts that Alice Water was giving to James Alefante in the Pizzagate thing.
Yeah.
And you could just see the Moloch machine, right? There it is. You can't see the whole picture, but you can see the Moloch machine, the title of it. Now, again, this is, digression, but it's troubling because, see, Alice Waters is the famous chef who gave Alefante this little gift bag. She's a Satanist. Why do I say that? Well, because she went around the country with some kind of food exhibit that went to at the front of it, she would play nonstop Ken Anger's film Lucifer Rising.
Jeez.
Just a bon appetit, everyone. Here you go. So,
of course, James Alefante is almost like a mini Epstein, perhaps.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, again, we look in at these people through both, however, the first blush of media is given. It could even be like from the secret society trying to tweak our minds, but then we can use analysis, try to make some more sense out of it. And so like with Alefantis, I mean, it's, to me, it was the Moloch and the Thelema and, these kinds of connections, which were really showing that there was some kind of sick structure of the government that he was plugged into.
No, he's just a humble pizzeria owner.
Right,
who happens to be counted among the 50 most powerful people in Washington, D.C.
Right, yeah, of course, just every day that would happen, you know. And again, here you have Epstein, the guy who cannot make any money but is a billionaire, and buys islands, which, you know, you get all of these ultra-rich types showing up, and then you have an entire avalanche of accusation.
Well, how it works is, I mean, Epstein's utility in all this would be that he's the guy that's maybe has the ability, the panache, if you will, to rub elbows with people like the Clintons, the politicians, entertain politicians and businessmen who an interested agency might want to compromise. So he's got, he can show them a good time, as Donald Trump said, he's a terrific guy. A hell of a lot of fun to hang around with, and he, you know, loves beautiful women almost as much as I do, or something. And
he likes young girls almost as much as I do.
It's like, as if, I swear, you know, that's what, as if, you know, you know, we all like to look at beautiful women. It's just that we aren't billionaires, so we can't buy them.
Right? Yeah. Donald's statement was kind of made me not have a lot of optimism about him draining the swamp.
Yeah. Because he's, you know, like all these people, they're sort of the sybaritic lifestyle. They're sexually liberated, so they're enslaved to their passions. So they're easily compromised. And I'm not saying I know how that, you know, Donald Trump has had his scandals and accusations. But how it works is you're wondering how, you know, Zog, as they call it, you know, Zog, how our government seems to be occupied. It's controlled by forces that we can't identify. We never seem to get the policies that we want, or the politicians never seem to enact the policies that they say they're going to enact, and these things. Why is this the case? Well, here it is. Everyone is compromised. Everyone of significance is compromised. Sybil Evans once said, she was talking to an FBI agent talking about the selection of federal judges and how they would do the background check. And the assumption is you do a background check to make sure it's clean. And the FBI agent informed her that actually it's the exact opposite. You don't want them to be clean because you want them to be compromised, or you compromise them in some way, and then you promote them, because that way you can do business with people like that. You don't want honest men in important in positions of power. They're not easily to handle. So these it's very easy to apply these people. You know, it's, you know, it's, particularly with sex, it's a universal human weakness, and if you're not of character, not mature, you can easily fall into this trap. Especially the type of people who seek political power. They have enormous appetites and egos, and they're very easily tricked into these things. But this is the practical way. This is how Jewish billionaires control the, not just bribing, you know, it's blackmail. You know, then if that doesn't work, it's murder, you know, because they have the wherewithal and the agency to do these things. If you read about how, like, Israel was formed, it was blackmail and murder, the threat of murder. Either lead or gold, support us, you know. And so it's not as if, you know, these issues are debated on Capitol Hill and our representatives weigh the issues and vote their conscience or vote what they see the best for the interests of the people and the country. No, I was reading, this is during the run-up of the Second World War. And, what was his name? Midwestern senator changed his position on the war, and it turned out, or involvement in the war, and it turned out that he had an affair with a British agent, a girl, and, you know, basically that's how they changed his vote or his public position on things. So, you know, it's one of these. This is how policy is made, you know.
Well, all the good old days. I mean, now, you know, if
Senator Vandenberg, like, that was his name, Vandenberg.
If you Arthur didn't Vandenberg. Have like a list of homosexual liaisons, you would be basically, you know, considered unqualified.
Oh, for yeah, office. That was it. Thing is, as society's become more debased, a mere affair is no longer enough. People, you got to find him with either the dead girl or a live boy, as they say. And that was like what we got. An older scandal, which was never really investigated, though declared debunked, was the Franklin scandal, of course. And that we had, you know, Larry King or Lawrence King, another, it was treated as a financial debacle, and he was charged with embezzlement. But that was only the top story. The real thing was he was running a pedophilic, a, you know, child sex ring, a pedophilic ring that was servicing many, mostly Republican. This was Craig Spence's operation, who also another person who committed suicide, along with Deborah Jean Palfrey, the DC madam, who committed suicide. Who yeah. apparently, you know, so.
You know what? I mean, the thing is, this is, if I would think that this will dissolve into mist, because the pedophilia, the child rape and child murder, is really explosive in terms of the psychology of the normie.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it's something that could really create some reaction against the oligarchs. And so that's
well, they have to stop treating every case separately. Stop compartmentalizing this. You have to take a meta level approach to these things and see all these things are connected.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
This is a network, so a system. This is a system at work here.
Yeah, exactly. And so the question I have is, so what would be the level of evidence? What would be the breakthrough that could actually crack open the normie's mind so that, they would just have to accept the fact that there is a secret society controlling government?
How about a U.S. attorney admitting that his investigation had to be stopped because it was above his pay grade and involved intelligence?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That would be like, you'd think that would work. Okay, so then this would be where, and if there's any real investigative reporting out there, like another Gary Webb, you know, wanting to get going toward a double bullet suicide, you know, this would be an area that would just be, is just begging for real investigative reporting. Is that who put pressure on Acosta? Who was the guy? And then what was in back of him? Where did the orders come from? How does it work as a system? So there's that. Because I don't think that photographic evidence or even like children coming forward and saying they were raped. I mean, I'm not sure that is going to have, because there's been so much of it, and it's so easy to like knock the stories into question marks, right? You know, where the power of them doesn't sink in emotionally.
These cases always get stopped because of some sort of intelligence angle. Same with the Finders case back in the late 80s. It was apparently the CIA put the kibosh on that when those kids were found out in Florida. And here you have an example of mid-level officials kind of doing their job, and then they're shut down. Same thing with the Epstein case. There's a common theme in all these things. And also to investigate, to find out who's doing it, well, that becomes very uncomfortable because you start to get into certain people of a certain ethno-religious group and certain organizations, and you're immediately charged of anti. The ADL will say, "Hey, you can't investigate this way. That's anti-Semitism." And then I wonder if the ADL is going to come to bat for Epstein the way they did for Leo Frank back in 1913.
So. Well, I mean, if you start having like strands of investigative analysis. Working the other way, because right now it's all like, you know, Epstein is he creates the evil, and then other people, you know, spin toward him. Well, if someone goes, well, actually, it looks like this guy is an absolute cutout, fake human being, lifetime actor. So who manipulates him? Well, and it starts moving in a certain direction.
It's Wexner's mega group.
Yeah.
This conglomeration of Jewish charities and businesses. You know, they're Zionist organizations, and you know they're tied into the Mossad, and it's all part of that power structure. And that's one way to look at it. That explains why he was given a 21,000 square foot mansion in Manhattan, prime real estate, by this guy.
Yeah, but then you have like the thing that I think would be also valuable would be then to try to figure out who are these Gentile associates, the Clintons, mm-hmm. as an example. Prince Andrew as another one.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not purportedly Jewish people, are they? Well, what are they? Well, wait, let's do DNA testing and see who these people really are. Because you see, this is, you have this, I didn't really see a lot of connection between Epstein and Freemasonry when I was looking into them. I couldn't see a whole lot of that. But you do have the Clinton connection, which of course is, you know, spot on Freemasonry. And of course, Prince Andrew, who's nothing but a Masonic cut out. So, you know, there is this question about, well, how do the, because we see this over and over again. So how do these two groups interact? What is the structure of power and centrifugal, you know, energy that enables them to basically control the media, control politics, control finance? I mean, how does that actually work?
And one thing that's interesting about that is I was listening to one of the victims. And she was talking what she was thinking was going through her head at the time. Of course, she's a teenager. But she said he was brought in to entertain and service various politicians, political figures, businessmen, men of finance, professors, academicians, and these. Well, all these people have to be compromised because all those sectors have to be compromised. The academic world, the business world, the political world, the same way that, the media, they'd have to all take part in this. So they have some sort of stake in the game or something. They need, so when there is some exposure, they'll close ranks to protect it. But she said, how do people, with such base, gross appetites as evil people rise to such levels of power? Well, they're the only ones that can rise to those levels of power, given the system that we have, because it's meant to, through systems like operations like Epstein, it will screen out decent people. And only the worst, that's how you get a cacistocracy, as it's called, government of the worst. And that's what the system is designed to do. And that's one thing that normies have to get in their head.
Absolutely. And then you have things like, I was looking at some of the people who are members of Bohemian Grove. And I was looking at that because of the Moloch, there's this owl club business, and then looking at these owl statues on Epstein's, his temple, whatever you want to call it. And, you have like Henry Kissinger and the Bush family and Zabrinsky. But you just have a bizarre collection of they're all the oligarchs. What keeps them together? How do you, I think the Bohemian Grove now is pretty well compromised. They may be like phasing it out, but I'm talking in the 70s and 60s when you have these, and so this would be, I think, where you could try to look for an answer to the question of who got to Acosta, and how they got to Acosta. Because you're absolutely right. They have to have a way of compromising real politicians as they come forward, right? They just have to. And so this would be certainly the most natural way to do it. Like you say, it's just get them in some kind of bizarre sexual, event, record it and just say, okay, you can become rich and powerful. But, if you ever cross us, here's what's going to happen. Before we kill you, we will, basically shatter your reputation. So that's how they could control it. But that isn't the answer to the question is how does the secret society, at the operative level, at the level of authority, how does the ones that are giving the orders to these people and compromising them, how does that group stay together for so long through all these generations of secret society? So that's what I would like to see someone take off with Acosta's statement. Is like, where does it go? Where are the structures of authority that could actually produce a question like that? That a U.S. district attorney would then back away because it had been presented to him.
Yeah. Ultimately, it goes back to the banking houses, Rothschild. Maxwell was a Rothschild agent, perhaps. After so many centuries, they have a system, that's vertically integrated and is controlled, and they know when and where to apply a pressure to ultimately get what they want. And this happens even at the local level. I was reading about Newport, Kentucky. Newport, Kentucky was the base where the Jewish mob went to set up all their casinos and bordellos and during Prohibition, they made a lot of money there. But even after Prohibition, they set up casinos and bordellos there and service the Ohio area, and people from Cincinnati would go across to Kentucky if they wanted to take part in these things. And eventually it would actually ensnare Jerry Springer, as a councilman for Cincinnati, who I think paid a prostitute off with a check or something. But anyway, this is back in the late 40s, early 50s, I believe it was Mo Dalitz at the time, who became a huge philanthropist and was given the Medal of, I think, Liberty, or Torch of Liberty by the ADL for his efforts. But he was he was in league with Meyer Lansky, and he played a pivotal role in setting up Las Vegas and these things. He was in the numbers rackets and all this stuff. But there was a local sheriff that had been elected, and he was ran on the campaign of cleaning up Newport. And people got so sick of all this corruption and everything that he won the just before the election, either just before or just after, so running for re-election. Someone slipped him a Mickey, then put him in bed with a prostitute or something. and I think the prostitute's name was April Follies or something. I don't know, something like that. But anyway, the wife knew this was so much out of his character that when this happened, she immediately took him to the doctor, and they found drugs in his system, proving that he had been drugged. And based on that, he won re-election or something, and he was able to chase the mob out of Newport, clean up Newport. But this is the kind of tax they resort to, even if you're not of... If you're not willing to do that sort of thing, or if you're not weak enough, they'll, you know, slip you a Mickey and compromise you that way.
Well, you know, I would like to live in a part of the country where politicians are afraid of being caught in illicit sexual activity.
Yeah, we're past that, aren't we?
I mean, well, here in California,
you know, it's pride.
It's the gay disco is pretty well in control, and so it wouldn't be an issue, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to say. I would think it would not be a decisive issue in, you know, in any political race. If the person was in with the group, the controlling group, they would just find a way to get around it. So I don't know if that's really you know, if that's how much that actually is going on now. But I think as if they have real individuals, see that again, it goes back to the interaction between, there has to be some interaction between the real politicians and the secret society that controls. Mm-hmm. And when they come into the orbit of political power, then if they represent any kind of trouble, because someone we were talking before the show about, you know, some congressmen are just so dim that I think they can just leave them alone. Yeah. They just don't have to worry about, you know, but others would appear to be, you know, like worrisome. They're, you know, maybe kind of threatening to do some kind of investigation that could lead into something. Well, those guys, it would be obviously a good idea to control them. And I wonder if this is still going on. It'd be a good area to, you know, to get into, but we don't need to, you know, we can't exhaust our investigative power. We have so little of it, it seems like. If there are investigative reporters who, you know, or check out our show, boy, I would just say, go after Acosta. Go after that guy. See what actually came down to him, because it hasn't been exposed. I mean, there is no documentation of it that I'm aware of, and it's the most important thing imaginable, because it's such a clear breach of the oath of office. So, you know, and of course, because now it relates so directly into the publicity surrounding Epstein's arrest, boy, this would just be a terrific thing to have some information come out about.
Yeah, there's an interesting piece today at the Unz Review, Ronan's website.
Yeah.
He's reading Gus Russo's books, The Outfit, about the Chicago Mob, and also Super Mob, the book I read about the Jewish Mafia, particularly Sidney Korshak out in California, your part of the world, and why California was so vulnerable. People don't think as California being, you know, controlled by the mob, but that's actually not the case. What happened is Chicago, people kind of identified it as mobsters and being corrupt. But in California, they're able to go out there and sort of insinuate themselves and become legit. People like Lou Wasserman, Jules Steins, and Sidney Korshak was sort of a go-between between the mob and also the various corporations and studios. And he was able to kind of get control of the unions and kind of use it as a bargaining chip in these things. He was a negotiator. But he was talking about how so many, I think it was, who's that guy, the judge, Balicone or Balasone, I forget his name. But he was, a lot of the property that was seized by the Japanese, from Japanese after Pearl Harbor, was given out to this guy, this Jewish guy who was a judge, to all his cronies, and they bought it up, you know, for pennies on the dollar, and made a vast fortune. Paul Ziffrin was another character, that they were able to sort of legitimize themselves and get control of California, the movie industry, the media. And so they could, you know, tell the Los Angeles Times not to cover them. Sidney Korshak kept his name out of the headlines for decades, and these things that they kind of operated behind the scenes. Mickey Cohen is another figure too. But the point was, in this article, he makes it seems to think that perhaps that a lot of the reason why a lot of the Jewish actors would support things like things that would lead to greater street crime was it was a way to divert attention from their own machinations and their own intrigues. While they're robbing the state blind, people would be concerned with street crime, petty crime, and that would create a diversion. So they could go on plundering and attaining mass wealth to the point now where the American people have been so impoverished through debt, cost of higher education, healthcare. All this is all part of sort of this corporatist, you know, cartel scheming. But everyone's upset now with either crime or identity politics and these things that no one focuses attention on these oligarchs that are robbing everyone blind. It's an interesting take on it.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned like organized crime in California. I mean, I think the most interesting one we've had out here is Bugsy Siegel. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he was actually like the confidant to all of the stars, Gary Cooper and Cary Grant, those guys. You know, as far as compromising, people, Bugsy must have been, you know, 100%, you know, someone that you could count on. And he was also the guy, the reason why I've kind of like spent some time studying him, when I was in Cuba, the Cubans recorded that Meyer Lansky and Bugsy Siegel had actually worked out a deal with Batista, the dictator, to like run the prostitution. Mm-hmm. And so they associate those two guys with basically the most heinous crime against Cuban women imaginable. Yeah. And many, you see, this is why it's interesting, because Siegel is a cutout. I mean, now it's known he was just getting money, you know, hands over fists from the syndicate and all the mafia people or syndicate people above him. But he claimed, you know, that he was like making money, gambling at the horse races. And he's right. So he's a cutout. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
He's so similar to Epstein. And he's definitely involved in pedophilia in Cuba. The Cubans are just still livid about this whole thing. And so anyway, Siegel met the appropriate end, but now I don't know if we have people around who knows how he actually died, but he was murdered somehow.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And again, and you can look at our society in general, particularly with, with the, Jewish-controlled Hollywood and the media, which has been largely... Judaized about the entertainment, how it, it's there to corrupt the sexuality of the consuming public, particularly by sort of commodifying young women. And beauty is powerful. It's true, but if you don't handle it right, if you don't use that effectively for the brief time that you have it, you can really mess your life up. And that's what's a lot of these girls are like. You look at some of these victims, or some aspiring models, they want to be stars and these things, so they're easy marks for someone with a little bit of cash, especially if you're coming from like a working class or lower middle class family or just functional background. But how easily, how figures like Epstein or people who run Hollywood, how they chew up youth, exploit beauty. It's everything society should protect, and it's not protecting anymore, because society has defaulted to sort of the values and ethics of this, of this type of people who are controlling sort of the media, the entertainment fare that we consume in the country.
Yeah. Oh man. Well.
And there's no sense of idea that a community needs to protect, their young women from these things, because everyone's free and liberated. They have no community support.
You're homophobic.
Yes. Yeah.
they've definitely been able to, you know, again, the attacks are coming from all different kinds of directions, because a lot of this is coming through cultural Marxism, which is breaking apart the identity,
yeah,
right?
You know? Yeah, yeah. Like, look at these girls. Now, I hear these stories. A lot of these girls didn't know what they're getting into, but a lot of them did kind of. Now, they're young. I understand that. But at 14 or 15, to have no sense of shame or very little sense of shame or modesty, you know, that's another thing, is where at even that age they're corrupted. Meaning, you mean I can get $400 just for taking my top off? Some of them knew they were doing this.
For sure. Like the yeah. one I think that actually led to Epstein's conviction, I think she was given $300
yeah.
for the massage, right?
Yeah. And so what kind of society is producing?
Well, but you know, my question is, where's the father?
Yeah, it's another question. Exactly.
You know, I mean, so this is what happens when you go into the, you know, single parent world, and you go into the world where you have zero parents.
How come no one's punched Epstein in the face?
Yeah.
That we know of.
But you see, this is a problem, yeah. because he shouldn't be able to rape so many children and not have at least one father say, you know, I'm willing to put my life on the line to bring some justice to this
yeah.
guy.
You
know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, once you're a convicted child rapist, you know, I just think you really shouldn't be able to walk the streets. And I'm not saying that from a technically legal position. I'm just saying that righteous fathers, right, like the people who... you know, who were the fathers of the children that had been violated and raped, they should be held in check. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. By the fact that he can't be on the streets, because it's sort of like the owl. You just don't put that in people's face. You don't just have this kind of conviction and then have Epstein flying around in his jet playing with Clinton and Alan Dershowitz. And he's having this great life, and the father and to say nothing of the victim, they're stuck with this for the rest of their mm-hmm. lives. See? And so where is the and so the, you know, again, vigilante justice, not an advocate, but I'm just saying it's wrong for Epstein to be able to walk the streets. That should be something that should be handled on a judicial level. You
yeah.
just get off the streets, because we would never put someone like this to force the father to you know, basically control himself, because who could? You see what I mean? Who could, really, if they're righteous? You know, they wouldn't. So now you have like chaos. So this is why you need the political system. This is why there is this social contract. So here it's failing, and it's failing not just because it didn't prevent these acts, but then it's failing because there's no real punishment, no correct punishment. I mean, this guy should never have been allowed out of prison after his conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a single hour. So, you know, anyway, we will make it a better world when we have better politicians, huh?
Yeah, so, well, at least ones that aren't taking all expense paid trips down to St. James, Little St. James Island.
Yes, sir.
Or, yeah.
So. Yeah. Those guys.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you so very much. We will talk again next week.
Okay. Enjoy.
Right,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.